Jet 7.
But he's here in the room. There he is. Hey. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Council, come to order.
I'm not familiar with it.
Carla, would you please call the roll and confirm that we're all here?
Yes. Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Sorry for the delay, everybody. We have a couple of significant things on the calendar this afternoon. Let's start with 892.
Accept report on the Women Into Housing Now initiative.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I think many of you know it's long been a focus of mine to provide services and support to women, children, and families who are affected by abuse and neglect. When the mayor assigned me the Portland Housing Bureau, I was very excited about that and immediately rolled up my sleeves and have worked together with Portland Housing Bureau staff to come up with a package to immediately fund to fund programs that will help get women off the streets. The recent point in time homeless census indicated a 22% rise in homeless women since the two-year period when it was last taken. And we also know that women are on the streets. Many of them are fleeing abusive situations. And we also know that being on the street makes them even more vulnerable to abusive situations. So I worked with Tracy Manning and other Portland Housing Bureau staff to immediately reprogram $300,000 in existing funds we have to devote right away to working with providers who have a proven track record of success, so that we didn't have to do an RFP, that we could just go to these providers and say, with $300,000, what can we do? And the metric is that with that $300,000, we can expect to get 92 women off the streets and into some sort of a permanence housing. And we will also be working on freeing up shelter space, working to avoid women having to enter shelters in the first place through things like eviction prevention. And so these funds are part of, as I said, immediately reprogrammed money to focus on this most pressing problem of helping the women get off the streets. But I also wanted to preview today for my colleagues the fact that I will be coming forward with a request for an additional $1.7 million in unbudgeted funds that I hope the council will approve at the fall budget monitoring adjustment process that will expand beyond just the immediate focus on women, but also bring to bear proven successful methods to get all people off the streets. Now, the $1.7 million plus the $300,000 isn't going to do it all, but again, working on methods we know that work, as I said, rental assistance, eviction prevention, helping to get people through the shelters more quickly to free up shelter space for others who need it. All of these techniques have been proven to be very successful. And in fact, the City Council, under Commissioner Fish's leadership when he was the Housing Bureau Director 2 or 3 years ago, devoted an additional $1 million to doing many of the exact same things, and it had a very significant success. I think there were some 330 people that were placed off the streets and into some sort of a permanent housing, and a year later, 73% of them were still in good housing situations. So I think we've seen that this can work if we put the resources in the right places. And so I wanted to preview that today as well, that'll be coming to you soon. And I'm very pleased we have some very distinguished panelists here, and I wanted to call up Multnomah County Commissioner Deborah Cafori, our Housing Bureau Director Tracy Manning, Keith Tomajon, the Executive Director of United Way, and Shannon Singleton from JOIN. So they are going to all
slide up another chair.
Yeah, we can move up one more chair. So I'm very happy that they are all here to speak about that. And the county, I did want to say before you get going that in forming this additional $1.7 million request, I will be convening a small committee of certified smart people like United Way, like JOIN, like Commissioner Cafori. Chief Reese is actually, I asked Chief Reese, could somebody from the police bureau participate in this committee? He said, I'd like to do it myself. So we'll have Chief Reese and about 10 people, and including the Portland Business Alliance, who will help sort of craft, you know, how to make this $1.7 million request really, you know, do the job we want it to do, and that is to get people off the streets and get them into some permanent housing. So with that, I will turn it over, maybe I'll turn it over first to our elected official, County Commissioner Deborah Cafori.
Thank you. Deborah Cafori, Multnomah County. Good afternoon. On behalf of Multnomah County, I'm very happy to be here today to reaffirm our city-county partnership and to stress our commitment to work together as we help vulnerable men, women, and children get off the streets and into housing. Recently, the Board of County Commissioners, you, the City Council, and Home Forward unanimously passed an update to our community's plan to address homelessness. This plan, called A Home for Everyone, lays out a renewed commitment to break down the silos among our agencies. Instead, we have pledged to find better and more creative ways to help vulnerable populations. For this plan to be successful, we must look beyond our current way of thinking. For too long, the city has focused primarily on homeless singles, while the county has focused primarily on homeless families. With this new plan, we are directed, all of us, the city, the county, faith community, community partners, to prioritize the needs and gaps in our efforts to find permanent solutions to end homelessness. I applaud Commissioner Saltzman for taking that first step today, and I'm very excited to be working with you as we challenge and push ourselves to make real changes to our respective systems. I also welcome the support of the mayor and the rest of the commission in these efforts to respond to the crisis of homelessness in our community. Today, I also pledge to work with my colleagues on the Board of County Commissioners to join with the city in finding additional funding to help those who are currently living without a roof over their heads. Thank you for your leadership, Commissioner Saltzman, and for your commitment to continue the city's long legacy of strong political will around the issue of homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Cafori. And next, we'll hear from our Bureau Director, Tracy Manning, as she can maybe spell out in a little more detail the 300,000 that's hitting the streets literally as we speak today.
Yes, absolutely. And also would love to provide a little bit more background on A Home for Everyone, which, as Commissioner Cafori mentioned, you all passed in this past spring. So right now, the city, through the Portland Housing Bureau, directs public resources as efficiently as possible to keep people moving from homelessness into homes. We join with our partners at Home Forward and Multnomah County to particularly choose in this plan to prioritize people who are most vulnerable on the street. Those include families with children, women, youth, and the approximately 50% of the homeless people with disabilities, which include chronic health conditions, and those struggling with addiction, and people living with mental illness. The Housing Bureau and the county each fund a spectrum of housing-related services that includes what we're recommending today: street outreach, housing placement, rent assistance. As you all well know, the city also funds emergency shelter, and we fund two emergency women's shelters that operate year-round. Right now, they each have wait lists, one of 130, the other of 190 women. If a woman needed some place to sleep tonight, it'd be weeks or even months before she could find a bed in one of these shelters. Unfortunately, it's also true that women of color are overrepresented among female homeless individuals. So, as Commissioner Saltzman described, the Portland Housing Bureau has begun directing funds for women into housing now with a special allocation of $300,000 from existing funds that were not allocated to a particular program that were able to be redirected to assist 92 women experiencing homelessness to find permanent homes. We're doing this through our really experienced and effective partners, some of whom are with us here today and all of whom are familiar to you: Human Solutions, Northwest Pilot Project, Join, and Transition Projects, to immediately put this money out on the street to permanently house these women. A quick report on some of the things that are coming up to further leverage this program. We're once again getting ready to start up winter shelter beds that will be dedicated exclusively to women. We're looking at 70 beds again this year, and we're hoping for an additional 45 at another site, which would be an increase of 30 over last year. We're still working with that owner to see if we can get the space. These winter shelter beds, as you well recall, are made possible because of the City Council's commitment this year to fund this decision package during a budget year where a lot of really difficult decisions had to be made.
Tracy, are you funded for those additional 35, or would that be funded in part by the supplemental appropriation?
It will primarily, we believe we'll be able to get it primarily out of existing funds. That's part of the, it's depending on how many square feet we can get. We do have the availability to use a little bit of these funds if we need to. So, as we all know, scarce economic times, more than ever, it's important that we come together, and that's really what I'm excited about to be sitting at this table here today. We want to leverage our resources as much as possible, and we're proud to be working closely with Multnomah County to carry out the vision that we set up with our community in a home for everyone, and I'm particularly energized to be sitting at the table with partners from United Way and to look for a new way forward. So before any further ado, however, I know it's not news to the City Council that Portland has an incredibly innovative and effective group of nonprofit organizations that are among literally the nation's best to work with and execute your vision. So I'd like to introduce Shannon Singleton, who's with us here today and is a partner from JOIN.
Good afternoon. My name is Shannon Singleton, and I'm the Director of Day-Space Services at JOIN. I've spent many years working with the homeless population in Portland, in particular women and people diagnosed with mental illnesses. As the director of the Safe Shelter, I served homeless women both in the shelter and in our day space. With Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, I oversaw the running of the Royal Palm Program, the street outreach team, and the clinical program at Bud Clark Commons. All of those programs were serving folks who were chronically homeless and also had diagnoses of severe and persistent mental illnesses. JOIN Street Outreach Team works with hundreds of homeless women every year to find permanent housing. Last year, we served 746 female-headed households. Every day, there are dozens of women seeking safety and services in our day space. Some of them living alone, in couples, or with their children. Last year, 55% of the people that JOIN was able to help find permanent housing were women. As part of Commissioner Saltzman's initiative, JOIN will have rent assistance to help an additional 25 female-headed households get off the streets and into permanent housing. This will include chronically homeless women and those with significant support and financial needs, vulnerable single women, and female-headed households with children. We will leverage our existing housing outreach and retention staff to make sure that these rent assistance dollars are deployed quickly and efficiently on the behalf of homeless women in our community. I'd like to share a story of one of the women who was successfully housed through these types of programs. Sarah was a young woman who was sleeping outside, very frequently sent to the hospital because of the symptoms of her mental illness, and would be stabilized at the hospital and returned to the streets. And this went on in her life for over 2 years. When she came into one of our programs and connected with a JOIN outreach worker, we were able to connect her with Cascadia Services as well. And I'm very happy to share that she is not only stabilized, has her medications, her health care, and her income, but she also moved into her permanent housing unit 3 months ago. On behalf of our director, Mark Jolin, JOIN's board of directors, our staff, and the people that we serve, I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and the City Council for the support of JOIN Services. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon. And our last speaker is Keith Tomajon, the CEO of the United Way of the Columbia Willamette, who will maybe talk about some of the things we talked about yesterday over lunch, about
Great.
Potential
Thank
partnerships.
You. By the way, that's a fancy title, but we know him as the former chair of the Parks Board.
Oh, that's true. That was true.
Commissioner, I don't like to throw my weight around.
That's yeah. why he was really flying high.
Thank you. It's a great honor to be here. And by way of endorsing what I believe is this really important initiative, what I want to do is tell you about the organizational direction United Way has committed itself to in the years ahead, and increasingly the kind of commitments we want to make that align directly with this important work the city and county is leading. I have been the president very proudly for the last 18 months, and we've spent the majority of that time really talking to the community about the kind of community we want to build together and the kind of united way we need to help us get there. And as we looked inwardly at United Way, we acknowledged a long history of good work, but we had to also be honest that in many ways the ways we're working aren't working. Despite a legion of good effort, investment, and intention in this community, we continue to leave large swaths of kids and family behind. And the disparities we know are most pervasive in communities of color and in our most impoverished communities. So at United Way, United Way 2.0 is really committed to new ways of work. There's a couple components of that. For us, first of all, we want to be more than an organization that raises a lot of money and writes a bunch of checks in the community. We believe we've got a bigger toolbox that we can use on behalf of the community that includes targeted investment, but also our ability to deploy strategic volunteers, to play an active role as a convener and a collaborator in this community, to help elevate the work of our partners through research, data, and best practices. And at the center of that is really a new collaborative spirit for United Way, a recognition that we can't do it alone. We can't philanthropic our way out of the problems that we care most about. And so a willingness to really align and partner and leverage our resources in new ways. At the end of the day, if we can get this work right, we hope United Way can kind of be a hub for regional solutions and strategies. So I'll tell you specifically about the plan we've laid forward, and then I want to kind of close by telling you about our actions and commitments. First of all, our stake in the sand in our strategic plan is to help break the cycle of childhood poverty in this community. The data kind of blew my hair back when I learned that 40% of kids in our community are living in low-income families. I thought I had worked in tough places, South Central, East Oakland, and when I learned that in our home, nearly half of our kids are living in families struggling with those terrible choices, that felt like a moment in time for us at United Way. So our strategy really has three focal areas. First, successful kids. It's a commitment to invest in and partner with the highest quality organizations that are building the developmental handrails to get kids successfully through their academic experience. We all know that the long-term ticket out of poverty for kids is a high school diploma and increased earning power and career and college readiness. Our commitment is to build that stronger continuum. But we're not going to stop there. The second ring of our circle is what we call stable families. It's really about building a stronger foundation for the families those kids go home to every night. And it's about getting them the health care, the housing, the economic supports that build short-term stability and long-term economic momentum. And then the third goal area for us is what we call connected communities. And it's really about building partnerships that create community-led solutions. United Way being willing to help set tables, particularly in our most impoverished communities, that bring together nonprofits, small business and corporate, funders, government, and individuals who are really willing to think differently about long-term viability and strengthening the fabrics of those communities. That's the plan. We're proud to commit ourselves to it, our assets, our resources, our investments, and our people for the next decade. In it, as community leaders, I will tell you a couple themes again. The first is collaboration, a recognition that maybe if in the 20th century United Way had been a little bit isolated, we were in many ways the only game in town for a lot of our partners. It's a recognition that there's a much richer fabric of work in the community that we want to tap into and be a part of. Second, we know it's got to be about more than money. We've got the ability to help in other ways, to deploy volunteers, to be a convener and a collaborator, and to help make meaning and data-driven decisions. And third, and I think this is important for you as leaders, as an organization serving the four-county metro region, including Clark County up in Vancouver, we want to help elevate some of this work to start to create regional solutions and strategies. The truth is, this leadership in this room has made a meaningful commitment to the issue of homelessness, and I'm proud to be a part of that. But homelessness shouldn't be a Portland or a Multnomah County issue. How can United Way help elevate strategies, solutions, and create linkages that cross jurisdictions? In the end, we're willing to put our money where our mouth is in a variety of ways. First of all, a central theme of our strategic plan is to build a stronger safety net. We are committed and eager to be a part of the conversations between the city, the county, Home Forward about how we might find new ways of work to both house and stabilize low-income kids and families. But along with that, as we go out and work with our 600 corporate partners and 26,000 donors, it's to try and mobilize them in a new way to raise money to invest strategically in this safety net. And at the end of the day, we're eager to think about how we can align those investments we make with those of the city and county. A couple specific examples. In the last year, we were very proud to make a small investment in the VASH program, co-equal with the city and county, that I thought had a hugely outsized impact in stabilizing veterans in our community and getting them into housing. This year, as we look at some of our safety net funds, we're very pleased to put $100,000 into the community straw fund, short-term rent assistance, to be a part of the solution to get people stabilized and move them down the continuum. And then beyond that, we're proud to make secondary investments in organizations that we think play a critical, if slightly less direct, role in housing stability in this community. Sizable six-figure investments in 211 Info, Mercy Corps, and other organizations that are helping to move kids and families into the system effectively and move them to where we need them to be. So it's a great pleasure to endorse the initiative, and thanks for the opportunity to be a part of the conversations.
Thank you.
Well, any questions?
Yeah, I have some questions for Tracy. First of all, thank you all for being here. Thank you for your partnership, and I totally support this reprioritization of funds. I'm wondering what's not going to be done. That we scrubbed the budget really hard during the budget process and funded the safety net extra, and there wasn't $300,000 sitting around.
Yeah, no, there wasn't. Asking. It was a little too complicated from the bullets, but I'm glad you asked because two different things happened. If you'll recall, during the budget process, we still only had estimates from HUD about how much money they were going to give us. They gave us fewer emergency solutions grant funds. They gave us more community development block grant funds than we thought we were going to get. So we did a couple of things. We were able to unshave some of the shaving we were doing of the existing shelter programs, and then $200,000 of that we wanted to be able to use for this program. It was unallocated. It made the final budget process, but it was unallocated because of the restrictions and strings on federal dollars. We can't. So I'm glad you asked, because I want to call out and thank the Portland Development Commission. They were doing some activities under the Economic Opportunities Initiative that could be funded with these federal dollars, but they were using general fund on it, so they swapped us some dollars so that we could redirect these extra CDBG funds. And then the final $100,000 we do in our loan portfolio, loans that are cash flow dependent, and we had more this year by the end of the year than we were expecting. Again, it was the wrong kind of money to be able to use. Transition projects was getting general fund for some activities that they could use these kind of dollars on, and so they agreed to swap as well.
Thank you. I knew you'd have a good answer.
And then, long, detailed, boring, but yes.
No, it's important, because otherwise people are asking, well, why didn't you do it earlier?
It's the right question to ask.
And then this is one-time money. It's not ongoing money.
That's correct.
And is it through the end of the fiscal year?
That's correct.
So these beds, the contracts are for the period to June 30th?
We're not. These dollars most likely won't fund any additional beds. It's rent assistance, outreach, and diversion.
Okay. So, and then that money will be asked for again in the safety net or the request for next year's budget?
To be determined from our commissioner in charge, but I suspect that's probably true.
And then I understand that we're using existing contractors, and that's why you didn't ask for new requests for proposals. I don't understand why we don't have why this isn't a resolution increasing the amount of money given to those entities.
I'm going to double check that I don't do this wrong. I'm looking desperately for folks in the audience who know the dollar amount in any given contract isn't high enough to require it, because we've got four different contractors that are covering the whole city. Is that right? Did I get that right? Are you guys nodding at me? Good. I can definitely ask Claudio or staff to follow up with you.
Yeah, I'm just getting used to having big bureaus with big numbers. So
we have cute little numbers.
She wants to know how to do the same thing. Right?
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Thank you all.
Actually, I've got one, Mr. Mayor. Keith, I really appreciate your work, your commitment, and your presentation. There's just one thing I'm concerned about. One of the disturbing trends in our society today is the turning of nouns and adjectives into verbs. So when you said that we can't philanthropic our way out of the problem, I was a little afraid you've gone over to the dark side. So I'd appreciate your commitment to rejoin the good side on that.
Commissioner, I fall humbly on my sword as a from a family of English majors. I've been known to butcher the language in service to the mission. So,
Mayor, before we lose the county commissioner, can I just publicly thank her for the role she played with our legislative agenda?
Yes.
Yesterday, she and I were in Salem for a bill signing that never occurred because the governor was tied up, apparently, in Mahonia Hall trying to get a grand bargain on something. It was either the budget or Syria or both. But the three priorities we had, Section 8 reform, Fairfield Hotel, and the home buyer limited tax exemption plan would not have been successful without strong support from the county. We had a unified strategy this year, and I say it because Deborah also mentioned reset and the spirit of collaboration as we look to rethink how we do homeless services. And I would say that the way the county and the city approach the legislative agenda reflects that robust spirit of collaboration. So I want to thank you for that.
And while we're having fun with Keith's verbal faux pas, I have to relate a story. My wife worked in the philanthropic sector for many years and once was introduced at a school visit by an earnest young third grader who said, "This is Nancy. She works every day with philanderers." So it could have been worse, Keith.
Right. Well, sometimes it feels that way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you all. Thank you all.
Okay, do we have any more panelists, Dan, or just folks that have signed up to testify? Carla, please.
We have seven people signed up. The first four, please come on up, are Lightning, Mike Withy, Joseph Gordon, and Joel Sievers.
Come on up. Oh, pull up another chair since you called four, if you can find a spare chair. Slide that up if you want. Sure. There we go. Welcome. Go ahead, Lightning. Thanks.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I absolutely agree with the direction this is going, providing the money for women in need of housing. One of the concerns I do have is that I know a lot of the women have children, and I really want to make sure that when you're saying permanent housing, there's something that they actually go into that can allow that also, because I was involved with the Shepherd's Door out in Halsey with Dr. Velma Hornstein and Reverend Ronnie Morris. And basically, when we kind of worked together to put that in place for the Portland Rescue Mission, we feel it was a great success to be able to have the women and the children in that facility. And I guess my point is that I really want to start hearing from the Portland Housing Bureau, more development projects happening. We're always talking about this limited supply of permanent housing. We have some great developers in this city with a great amount of knowledge, creativity, and I feel now is the time that we need to really step it up and get more participation from the developers in developing more permanent housing. Because every time we fund the nonprofits, and I commend them on their efforts, but a lot of studies are saying that permanent housing is what we need. We need housing first. We need to get them into permanent housing. That will save the most money. And I just don't hear about any development projects that are happening that are in place to really reduce homelessness. And I just want to start hearing that. And I've mentioned before the Wapato 175,000 square foot facility on 18 acres, currently was used for 552 beds for for a jail that's sitting empty, and we're always talking about a shortage of housing. We need to begin to focus on these properties and to have a permanent long-term plan, sustainable, to where we can offer the mental health services and all the different services that we need to provide and really get these people off the street on a long-term basis and not have to keep funding the nonprofits every other year. They need long-term, permanent, sustainable housing. And that's what I want to start hearing more. We have some great developers out there that know how to put these deals together. If they need more incentives to do it, we need to offer it to them, and we need to get them developing more of these projects and have the housing for the homeless to go into. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lightning.
Joseph, go ahead.
Hello. For the record, my name is Joseph Gordon, a.k.a. Tequila. And pretty much I just want to say that since the city has planned, I mean, I've been working on me on my level, I'm going to work on them on the level that I know of. There is women that's out there as a homeless individual. There is women that's out there that has been abused and has that are on the streets. But they are also what we forget. I mean, I know we hear the stories of here, and I'm not talking about women that have been abused. I'm talking about women that's abusing the system that's in play today. I know a woman right now who was abused by her boyfriend, been under a bridge for 2 years, but she was provided an apartment, which she still has. She goes over there, and she makes it look like when it comes to inspections, make it look like someone's living there, but she's still living under the bridge with her boyfriend that caused the apartment. There's a woman who I know that's paying $30 rent for abuse as well, and she smokes, excuse me, and I'm not trying to be funny or just trying to sound mental, but she smokes crack like it ain't no tomorrow. These stories, when you go down there, excuse me, and I'm not talking about, of course, not the women who this really, what I'm saying is, trying to make a protocol for the women who really need this, to get in. Because there is also individuals who's getting in here who's just using it. I mean, this is on count on count. It's the thing on the streets. If you're a woman, oh, you know, you got a black eye or something, whatever, just abuse the boyfriend. This church would give me housing for the hotels, a hotel for a week. This place can put me in whatever. Just say if you got, you know, I've been abused by my boyfriend. There should be some type of protocol for the women who really needs this to get in and trying to filter out the ones who's just using it and abusing it. And that's what's not happening. There is no protocols. When you just give someone something and just give it and there's no protocol, you're welcoming anybody else. And there's the people that's outside who really needs it are being left outside while the ones abusing it are indoors. And that's what I'm just saying. There needs to be some type of protocol, some type of proof, well, you know, a police report or something. You guys got to stop just letting anyone in. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to work with you, and because that's how it works on the streets, you know. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks. Next, go ahead.
Mike.
Go ahead, Joel.
Okay. My name is Joel Sievers. I do go to Cascadia for mental health. Got a neuropsychologist who works there. I have a subscriber for medications. They pay for my medications to get refilled. It's a really good thing. Also, when you put into play on these apartments, maybe, I mean, in some states they do UA sampling when you live in an apartment, because so many people need these apartments, and people get in there and they start, you know, messing with drugs. They start doing things. When we were looking for apartments, I had to get a PO referral to get an apartment. A PO who wasn't my PO came out and started, questioning me and bringing up things in my past criminal record that got dismissed from court. And she was going to use this against me in finding an apartment. And then luckily the woman at the apartment, when we gave her the money for the application, started talking to my actual PO. And he said, no, don't talk to her. You got to talk to me. And so there's these loopholes, and there's these uppers, and there's these downers. I mean, I'm totally for housing women, and I'm totally for saying yes on this whole thing. But also, you got to go above and beyond the horizon. Hopefully, you guys aren't just looking at this like, oh, we did a good thing. Hopefully, it keeps on continuing. And definitely make sure the money's going to where money is needed most, you know. I hope to see you guys out there managing also how these places are doing, you know. Keep up on it, you know. Definitely just don't give them the money and turn the other way. don't do that. You got to keep up with their progress, you know. They got to give progress reports. I don't know. I don't also know what else to do. That's all I can say right now.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm here to talk about Amanda. Amanda came to us at the protest across the street at Chapman Square before it was fenced off. Amanda had come from up north where she had been raped repeatedly by her stepfather. She showed us the court papers, and the next morning, the police came to her and told her that she had to move off the sidewalk or she'd be arrested. So we lost track of Amanda. I was able to see her yesterday way up far in the northwest, where she told me that she had been raped repeatedly after she had left us. We had her a place to go. We knew that she was going to be okay. She's not okay. She's never going to be okay. So I think by putting $300,000 to get 100 people off the street, is, you know, it's great. But what about the other thousands? You know, I've mentioned before about relief camps like we see after natural disasters during emergencies. It seems to me that everybody up there is unwilling to even talk about an AmeriCorps relief camp, a very professionally run relief camp with all the services that you would need to get on your feet. For some reason, it's just not part of your agenda. How are we going to get these thousands of people a safe place to sleep off our sidewalks if we don't discuss this? That's it.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next three are Michael Birch, Shirley Burke, and Charles Johnson.
Michael, this is homelessness?
No.
Yes. It's okay. Happens all the time. Okay, Charles.
Good afternoon, counselors. It's good to be back in front of you and to see some good news for an unfortunately small segment of our population of unhoused women. One thing that becomes difficult when we have these discussions is to talk about gender equity. And hopefully the way this, you know, you want to have women in safe place separated from abusers, but we also want to make sure that no children fall through the cracks because their single parent is a father. Really, we're still stuck a little bit behind when we talk about women's homelessness and men's homelessness. We just need to end homelessness. And as four professional people came up, and then fortunately we had four other homeless people come up and talk. And what you learn is that you're creating a game where you're telling the homeless people to maximize their victimization to get assistance. And as a fairly capable person who's not sleeping the streets right now, I'm certainly glad to see, I do want the most troubled people, be they women or men, to get assistance. However, if you leave these people on the streets long enough, they're all going to become troubled and victimized. So it is important that you listen to Mr. Withy and Lightning so that all 1,700 or 1,800 people are undercover when it's raining and have access to heat and hygiene. To get more money, we probably have to be attentive about crossing our T's and dotting our I's. So I do want to point out that on the 7 pages that were attached to this agenda item, it's an internal city document, so I don't think the feds will stab us in the back for it. But item number 10 on the last page doesn't look good to politicians. Is any future public involvement anticipated or necessary for this council item? Please describe why or why not. I hope you can look at that and see that the wrong answer is down there. There needs to be continuing public involvement, particularly from the houseless population. Do you have input?
Yeah, just to clarify, that's on this particular allocation of funds. So after the council approves it, we don't expect public input on whether we should continue funding these particular beds.
I guess we obviously know that should be continued. I hope that the presence of 4 other people in situation being served by houseless services indicates to you that there's still an insufficient level of engagement. As a matter of fact, as we look right now, in 13 minutes, the Coordinating Committee for Ending Homelessness will be meeting over at First United Methodist. I don't know if there'll be any homeless people there. I'll be going to check shortly. And under item number 10, it's probably just an assistant director doing something for a very busy director. I appreciate all Tracy's work, but Leslie Goodall is not Tracy Manning. So I don't know how that happened to come out, but for people who are citizens involved in trying to help you come up with the most effective solutions, you know, we want to make sure that we don't put ourselves in a position where we get less federal funds because the I was shaped like a T or something like that. Thank you very much for rushing this through. We definitely know that there are women in crisis out there, and hopefully they'll be helped this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Unless there was a Shirley Burke. Shirley Burke.
Oh. On the next one? Okay. That's all? All right. Any further council discussion? Then, sorry, go ahead.
I arrived too late to sign in. Commissioners, Mayor Hales, my name is Crystal Linsky. I represent 10,000 concerned citizens. And you know me from about 2008 when I came here to testify on my experience with the services in homelessness in the city. I became homeless, and I've been coming here for that many years now to give you updates. I knew these services inside out, and it was harrowing, to say the least, but demeaning, difficult, complicated, and being a woman on the streets is quite an experience. It definitely changes your life. Yes, this is a good plan, but we continue to think in terms of temporary bandages. We're not thinking through these plans. And I've mentioned over the years the services that I thought were faulty, which ones were good. I was very impressed with places like women's transition housing at Catholic Services, as well as Rose Haven. I've also seen in place some really good services for families and homeless women. Personally, my experience with the one that was on 82nd and the Max, what was that one? Human Solutions. But I, in my mind, I always think about these families and their children not going to school. And the situations, you know, when you're in the shelters, they have all these arbitrary rules that you have to follow. And if you break a rule, like you bring in a cardboard box to put your belongings in your storage, they'll kick you out on the streets where you get hit and hurt by cops, really. But when the kids and the families go out on the streets, you know, I see them in their cars, and there's just, they don't have the gas to go anywhere. It's so depressing. When we plan these shelters, we need to think holistically of what is needed for, as the gentleman speaking earlier, We need a whole holistic system of education, hygiene, gardening, cooking, training, parenting, and the feeling that you have a house, you have a home, and you don't have to worry a year from now whether or not you're going to have it. Also, who are they going to let in? As I told you once when I testified, HAP and HUD refused to give me subsidized housing based on apparently an eviction, and I argued with the so-called lawyer who said she was a lawyer and then she wasn't, and then, oh my God, it was never resolved. I said to her, you didn't do your homework. You didn't do your research. That was a slumlord that I won a settlement with, and then I took him to Boley and sued him. Did you have that in your notes? And you're not going to give me subsidized housing? How do they make their decisions? It was really hard to get the shelters that I got into, to get into them. And as I think Mike was saying, they maximize your vulnerability in order to be eligible. And to be at that position at all is just inhumane. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said. Appreciate it. Thank you. Anyone else? So unless there's further discussion, we need a motion to accept the report.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate our invited testimony and the testimony of those who decided to testify today, too. The $300,000 that is being reprogrammed immediately to help women who are homeless on the streets is certainly not the end. It's the beginning. And as I mentioned earlier, this will be accompanied by a further request for additional funds of $1.7 million to invest again in this current fiscal year to address the serious problems of homelessness, but investing in solutions that get people off the streets, that reduce waiting lists at shelters, that help people be prevented from being evicted, and provide rental assistance. So that's what we're going to be investing in, is things that we know work. This $300,000 today is going to help 92 women get off the streets. And it's working through programs that we know and trust, and we know that they do a good job. I want to thank...
R2-D2 and Occupy were two...
No. Okay.
I want to thank the staff at the Portland Housing Bureau for their work in helping me to come up with this proposal. Tracy Manning, the director, Danielle Ledesma, Sally Erickson, Jennifer Chang, Ryan Dibert. I also want to thank Amy True and Shannon Callahan of my office. And as Tracy mentioned earlier, we need to thank PDC, Portland Development Commission, also for playing ball with us to figure out a way that we could use $200,000 of their general fund in exchange for them being able to use an additional $200,000 of community development block grant money. I think that's how it happened. Anyway, so it was a really cooperation on their part that made this $300,000 immediately available. So thanks to all, and as I said, I will be assembling a committee to help shape the request for $1.7 million to make sure it is investing in solutions that are effective in getting people off the street. So thank you. Aye.
Novick?
I very much appreciate everybody's work and this step, and look forward to seeing the $1.7 million proposal. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for prioritizing this very urgent need and for, when there was additional money available, making sure that it's available for women. And I do appreciate you putting the additional request into the budget process so that we can look at it against all of the competing needs, as we did in this previous budget cycle, and have proper public input on all of the requests at once. Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership and partnership on these tricky issues. Aye.
Fish.
First, I want to thank Dan for both of the initiatives, for what brings us here today, and for foreshadowing a $1.7 million ask. I was thinking, as you were telling the history about the $1 million ask a couple years ago, your 1.7, I'm tempted to partner with Amanda and bump that up to 3.5 just to get the bidding going. But it is a huge step forward, and I thank you for your leadership, Dan, and your passion around these issues. I'm also pleased that you mentioned Sally, Ryan, and Jennifer. We have the best ending homelessness team of any city in the country, and they are MVPs, and what you will find is every time you ask them to take on Mission Impossible, they'll come up with a solution. So we're just grateful for their work. And I also appreciate, Dan, that in your comments, you highlighted the fact you're looking for proven strategies with trusted partners. You emphasize long-term cost-effective approaches, and specifically with your next budget request, this idea of getting at bottlenecks. And that's important because we don't have to add a lot of bureaucracy and capacity to the system if we remove bottlenecks, because we can move more people through the system and into homes. I want to thank our partner, Deborah Cafori, for once again stepping up, and for Keith for giving an inspiring speech. Only Keith could mention in passing Operation 305 like it was just a trifle and a small down payment. Because of United Way partnering with all three jurisdictions, we filled 305 vouchers for homeless veterans, which was an amazing accomplishment. And I want to close by just acknowledging that in 2000, President Obama said in his strategic plan for housing, we would end homelessness among veterans by 2015, and we would end homelessness among families and kids by 2020. Those are audacious goals, and frankly, very few people think we're going to hit them. But we will not be successful if Congress keeps cutting CDBG and home funds as they did this last fiscal year in sequestration, and expecting local cities and counties to pick up the slack. Unless we are given permission by the Fed to print money, we simply cannot keep substituting our dollars for what is, in the President's own strategic plan, what he calls a national problem that requires a national solution. So I applaud you, Dan, for using the resources we have creatively, and I will stand shoulder to shoulder with you when you come back with your supplemental request. But let us also, in our legislative ask this spring, county and city, let us once again call upon the federal government to honor its commitment to ending homelessness by investing in our programs. Aye.
Hales.
Let me take a moment to just make some commendations and some connections of seemingly, perhaps, disconnected issues. One, Commissioner Saltzman, your leadership, and Commissioner Fish, your leadership as his predecessor on behalf of the housing agenda of the city is great, and we appreciate it, and this is exactly the kind of innovative work that we expect a commissioner in charge and their bureau to do, to take the resources we have and try to do more. So I'm very appreciative of that. Secondly, this council, in a difficult budget, held the safety net harmless and worked in cooperation with Multnomah County to make sure that in a time when we were cutting budgets that we held the line on these critical services. And then third, this council also directed our bureaus to try to hold down spending during the last months of the previous fiscal year. That now is producing an ending fund balance for the city of Portland, because all of our bureau managers, whether they have anything to do with housing or not, did a great job of following that instruction and held down on spending to the point that we're going to be able to pay down some debt, thereby putting us in a stronger position for the general fund for every year hereafter, and make good on some hopes like this one for investment in critically needed services now. So it was a tough budget year. This council made a lot of difficult decisions. These bureau directors all really over-delivered in terms of following our instructions, and now this is an inflection point from reduction to addition. I'm very happy that we're here, and it took a village of effort to get us here. Appreciate all the good work and look forward to more. Aye.
Mayor, can we take a 3-minute
break? Yes, let's take a 3-minute break and let people change positions here, and I know we've got a whole bunch of people lined up for the next item.